What's up, y'all? I'm Alan Hain, the Lawn Care Nut, and this is episode 26 of Lawns Across America. Hey, so welcome back, y'all. It's September 3rd, the day I'm recording this, the day after Labor Day. We're fully into September now, so I'm going to be speaking a lot to you folks out there with cool season lawns because you're doing a lot of aeration and overseeding, and there's tons of questions that come in around that. However, for warm season lawns, I got some stuff for you today, too. I've got one call on tap for you because you are also coming into a little bit of a different transition, exactly the opposite of what our cool season friends are coming into. So we're going to start shifting and giving you some content as well. With that, let me apologize for not being able to put out a podcast every single week here. It is very intensive to do these because they're well over an hour in most cases, and there's editing and everything else that gets involved with it. And also, I tend to put in a little bit more research and take a little bit more notes with these, so there is a little bit more prep work. But I promise, as things go along and as I'm able to kind of get into a better workflow here going into 2020, I'll do my best to make sure that we get 52 of these out next year. Now, that doesn't mean it's over for this year. We got plenty more left. Just figured I'd share that with you. So the first topic I kind of wanted to talk about today is a little bit of a level set, one of those things where I'm seeing a lot of different viewpoints around the internet on different tasks that are being done. And I'm seeing people ask, well, is this the right way? Or is that the right way? Or so-and-so does it this way, but that's better than that way. And so-and-so says their way is the only way. And so-and-so says, well, I read a study that says if you do this 100% of the time, it's going to destroy your lawn. And it's not, and that, all of these things, right? And what that does is it can cause a lot of confusion, and it can cause a lot of, I mean, I've even seen people arguing over lawn care tasks, which is something I never thought I would see, but it, you know, we are a very passionate community. So with that, what I wanted to do is kind of get you to look at things, not so much black and white when it comes to the lawn, but realize that there is a lot of gray area when it comes to approaching a lawn care strategy. One analogy I would use is raising kids. Let me ask you in the audience, what's the best way to raise kids? You see, there is no right answer for that because there are so many variables in raising kids. You kind of have to just work it out on your own. Now, there are some steadfast types of guideposts that you can follow, and it will help you. But for the most part, everyone raises their kids based on their own experiences as kids. And you can kind of look at lawn care that way as well. And if you're going to learn about lawn care, you're going to learn from people who have experiences. And the only thing they can do is share with you their experiences. Let's look at it another way. How about dieting? What's the very best diet? Can you tell me? No, because everybody's metabolism is a little bit different. I mean, what would you say? Is Weight Watchers the best? What about Weight Watchers for men? What about Nutrisystem? What about Nutrisystem for men? Terry Bradshaw and Boomer Esiason can't be wrong, right? What about going vegan, meat-free, carb-free, gluten-free, heavy cardio, no cardio, coffee, no coffee? There are all kinds of different ways to approach fitness or dieting or losing weight or getting in shape. Even those terms there mean different things to different people. The idea being there is no definitive, this is how you do it. It's the end goal that matters. However, there are always some hard, fast rules that you have to follow no matter which diet you go on. Now, keeping with the analogy of diets, even if you're on a different diet than someone else, if you're on a different track, if you have a different strategic approach to dieting, there are still areas of overlap where you can find common ground. For example, have you ever noticed how there is no diet that hates on kale? Like, I have never heard of a diet or a nutrition plan or a fitness plan that says kale is bad, avoid kale. It doesn't happen. Kale is one of those things that everybody loves. Another one of those would be coconuts. And in fact, coconuts have replaced everything for every diet. It's not just about coconuts anymore. It's about coconut oil, coconut sugar, coconut flour, coconut milk. Coconut milk has replaced cow's milk in a lot of diets. And nobody hates on coconuts. I can't think of any diet that says avoid coconuts. So those are just two examples of common ground that can be found in the diet world. Now, there are some things that we can overlap with in lawn care. There are certain, you know, universal truths is a term I've used in the past. And one of those is if you don't water your lawn, it's going to die. It's just how it works. Lawns, plants, they have to have water in order to live. Another one would be sunlight. If your lawn doesn't get sunlight, it's going to die. I don't care what your approach is, whether you mow high, whether you mow low, whether you fert low in, whether you fert high in, whether you fert FOSS, whether you fert whatever you're doing, you're spraying weeds, chemical-free, natural, organic, all of the above, Birkenstock as you can be, if your lawn doesn't get sunlight, it's going to die. Those are universal truths. And so what I would ask is when we go to approach lawn care, that instead of looking at the extremes or the things where we don't agree, let's look at the places where we do agree and then extrapolate out from there to try to understand how someone is approaching their particular strategy, and then we can find the common ground. So the first thing you should do as a DIYer when you're going out there and researching, you know, how can I approach my lawn? What are the problems that I have? How can I get it fixed? How can I make it better? Realize that everybody is going to give you their opinions based on their experiences, but we all still have that common ground. And let's start from the common ground and work our way out. And then that's when you choose your own adventure based on, you know, your equipment, your budget, your lawn size, your ability, what you like, liquid versus granular, all of these different things. And then we can all move forward together. That being said, what I share comes from my experiences, and I have a lot of experience working with homeowners. In fact, I've been working with homeowners, as I mentioned before, DIYers on the internet, like coaching people through email or through comments or through my videos. A lot of times the videos that I make just come from comments or conversations that I have online. Definitely this podcast is exactly based around that. And all of those things and all of the ways that I talk you through these strategies come from my experiences of working with other homeowners or other DIYers across the country via the internet, because working with someone and coaching them via the internet is a lot different than talking to somebody face to face at their door where their lawn is right there and you can actually get down in it. So there does have to be a certain nuance to that. And I'd like to think that I've done pretty well with that over the years. And that's what I share with you here are the experiences that I've had, not only in my professional life when I did lawn care for a living, but also as I've worked with folks on the internet and understand how to guide them in a certain way, knowing that I'm doing it through email or, like I said, through videos, flat pictures, all of these kind of things. And that brings me to the first topic we're going to talk about today. If you guys will remember, a couple weeks ago, I did a short podcast, 16 minutes. Please go back and listen to that. It's all about top dressing versus leveling or flattening your lawn. And I gave you a whole bunch of analogies and a whole bunch of different ways to look at it, because in my experience, top dressing your lawn is very different than leveling or flattening your lawn. And so that kind of spawned some more questions that I wanted to go ahead and address today. And the first one is, Alan, if I need to reseed or I need to overseed thin spots, but I also have to level or flatten my lawn with sand, is the seed going to grow in the sand? And the answer is, don't look at those things as all or nothing. Look at them separately. So here's what I'm talking about there. If you need to level or flatten low spots in your lawn, that takes priority over seeding, aeration, fertilizing, pretty much everything, because your lawn is essentially unusable, or it is not as usable as it could be when there are areas that need to be leveled or flattened out, right? If you have a bumpy lawn, it doesn't matter how beautiful it is, it's not pleasant to utilize the lawn. It's not pleasant to walk on. It's not pleasant to mow it. It's not pleasant to play soccer on it or whatever things that you guys do on your lawns. If it's bumpy, unlevel, uneven pits, areas that hold water, sags, whatever you want to call them, if that's in the lawn is unusable. So forget about seeding right now, forget about fertilizing, and get that fixed first. Then move on. The idea being, you don't have to correct every single problem here in September of this year. You are going to live with your lawn for many years, hopefully. Hopefully, you're going to stay in your house for a long time, and you're going to treat your lawn just like any relationship, that you're going to invest in it for the long term. You don't go and try to fix every single problem in that relationship within a 45-day span. No, what do? You kind of pick your spots. You take the easy wins first, or maybe you fix the things that are really damaging that relationship the most first, you correct those, and then you kind of tick off boxes. And what you notice is if you have a long-term relationship with someone like that, that over time that relationship gets really, really, really good because you all have worked together to overcome the problems one at a time. And you learn each problem that you overcome, you learn to be able to work together to overcome the next one that much quicker, easier, better, or without as much collateral damage. And the same thing can happen in the lawn. So that's where I'm saying, don't try to do it all now. If you need to level the lawn, if you need to flatten the lawn, do that first. Now, one thing I want to caution you about is what caused the bumps, what caused the ruts. Typically, it's going to be water. And one of the things that if you click the link in the description below, if you're on YouTube, you can check out a video I just put out over at my buddy Chris's house over by Lakewood Ranch over by there. He's got a big project going on. We did actually some videos on plugging there a couple weeks ago. And now I'm just continuing to work with him. We put some rain gutters on. That's what the video is about. And we also installed drainage because he's got a blank canvas now. He's completely re-landscaping the thing. And I said, man, we have a very good opportunity here to take care of all the water flow that comes off of your roof and all the water flow that comes off of your pool deck and get that out and away from your future lawn space. Because what does flowing water do? It creates ruts, creates bumps. water's going to find its way through and it's going to create ruts. I mean, it created the Grand Canyon, if you think about it. So it's going to do the same thing in your lawn. So that's what I'm saying. If you need to flatten and level things out, why don't you first check and see what can I do to go ahead? Maybe it's going to be a little bit more invasive, but do that now. Get that water controlled. Get that water. Again, you'd be surprised how much water comes off your roof. And if it goes into downspouts and into your lawn, plus the rain or whatever that's already falling on the lawn, that can really wreak havoc. And that can be one of the reasons for your low spots. So check that out for sure and correct that first. Then do your leveling. And then maybe the next year, that's when you start worrying more about, hey, I've got thin spots. Maybe I need to sod a couple spots or seed a couple spots. And that can be when you do the aeration overseeding the following fall. And because of that, maybe you'll have to decide against seeding in the spring too. We have a question about that coming up a little bit later about seeding in the spring and some of the different tips that I can give you about that. Idea being here, eat the elephant in small bites, take care of the things that are damaging the relationship with your lawn the worst now, and then work on the rest later. As you grow a lawn over time, you're going to get better and better at it. You're going to learn your land, and you're going to be able to get success much quicker in the future as you've learned it and as you've worked with it and as you've improved that relationship together. Okay, now the next topic we're going to get to, this is the most, how do I say, like, I get more questions about this than any other topic this time of year. I'm sticking with my cool season friends here. Warm season, you guys hang in there. Hopefully you're enjoying this. You're picking up a little bit of what I'm putting down when it comes to the overall approach. But the next one is, Alan, I'm getting ready to aerate and overseed like in the next week or next 2 weeks. How do I mow leading up to the aeration and overseeding? And then the second part of that question comes into, okay, after I've seeded, I'm putting all this fertilizer down, my grass is growing really fast, when can I mow it for the first time knowing that I've got baby grass growing in there? So let's address the first one first. Now, you guys know that with my strategies, typically when I tell you to aerate and overseed, I tell you to poke a whole bunch of holes with the aerator, overseed, not more than 7 pounds per thousand square feet, but seed is definitely cheap, throw her down. Don't go more than 7 pounds per thousand. You don't want overcrowding. You don't want stacking. You don't want the seed stacked up on itself, but definitely 7 pounds per thousand will be just fine. But then on top of that, I recommend that you throw down 1.5 pounds of nitrogen. Now, you can use all kinds of different fertilizers in there. You want some high phosphorus. We now have a liquid product available called Green Pop from Green County Fertilizer. If you like liquids, you can put a liquid starter fertilizer down that's going to have N, P, and K, and especially high P, because phos is something that's going to help your rooting and help your seed to jump out of the ground quicker. But on top of that, I want you to throw down, maybe you put down a little Milorganite, you know, this and this and that. By the way, if you have X start, you don't need anything else. Only X start. I always get those questions if I've said one thing before and another. Just listen, if you have X start, which is the carbon earth product, you don't need anything else. All I'm trying to say is you have all these different options, but I really want you to throw down FERT, not only to help your seed jump out of the ground, but part of my strategy is to also help your existing grass really thicken up really fast, because in the fall is a heavy growth period for your cool season turf. It's going to put in a lot of roots. That's also going to put in some top growth. And you want to take advantage of that by blowing it hard with FERT, pushing it hard, push, 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 bulk it up while your new grass grows in the middle of that and thicken it all up together. One of the things that can happen with that, though, is the grass grows really, really long, really, really fast. So leading up to your aeration and overseeding, definitely over the couple weeks before, take your lawn down to, 3 inches, even 2 3/4 is fine, as long as it's not too hot out. You don't want to stress it if you can help it, but definitely get it down a couple notches. Is that required? No, but if you can do it, if you have that ability, go ahead and take the lawn down a couple of notches leading up to the aeration and overseeding and heavy FERT period. Now, and here's where the biggest question comes in is, after you seed, Alan, when can I start mowing? Now, typically I would have told you to wait 30 days and then you can mow. I mean, that would be like perfectly ideal. Let the baby grass grow for 30 days so that way it can kind of harden itself off, it can support itself, it's got enough root structure in there that when you get out there with a mower, it's going to be able to handle it. However, it's nearly impossible for you to wait 30 days. Your existing grass will definitely be 6 inches tall after that 30 days, and you might get a letter from your HOA. So in this case, I want to just bring up some realities to you. And I always look at the professional market, because the professional market shows a different reality than what you guys do. And when I say that, what I mean is you're a DIYer. You have one job. You have one lawn. You can do the lawn perfect. You can hit the seed window perfect. You can put down exactly how much FERT you want. You can water it perfectly. You can do all of these things so you can get your one lawn looking good. Professionals don't have any of that luxury. They have a bunch of customers they have to take care of. In some cases, like True Grain, they have thousands of customers they have to take care of. Those customers are typically not as you know, detail oriented when it comes to watering and mowing. In fact, most of those customers that are going to pay to have their lawn fertilized are also paying a lawn mowing company to mow it for them, or a very good portion are. So let's think about that. So True Green does thousands of aerations and overseeds every single year. And by the way, they're very successful. I did those. I actually performed hundreds of aerations on the south side of Chicago when I worked for True Green. And I did those aeration and overseeding, and I followed them and watched them and worked with my customers and saw the results were great. Let me tell you something though. The reality is, the truth is, that thousands of those lawns that get that aeration overseed get mowed with commercial mowers every single week, starting immediately right after the aeration and overseeding. What am I saying? I'm saying that those are successful. They're just not perfectly successful. And that's what you have to look at. You can strive for perfection all you want, but you're never going to hit it. You're a human. You are never going to be perfect. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't still strive for it. You should still go for it. Because if you strive for perfection and fall short, that's better than striving for mediocrity and falling short, if that makes sense to you. Follow what I'm saying. Pick up what I'm putting down. All of those lawns are mowed. All of those lawns are mowed with giant commercial mowers, and everything works out fine. And by the way, they're not even watered very well either. You, though, you have a small little 21-inch Honda or small little 21-inch Toro, Husqvarna, whatever you have out there, and you can get out and do a light mowing whenever you want. Do I think you should mow it every single week and stomp on it and then go have a football game out there on top of your new seed? No, but what you should do is, if you have to mow, go ahead and mow, get out there and get off. Just do it. You're not going to kill anything. Now, if you see an area of your lawn where the grass has germinated and it's looking good and it's a big patch, don't go dance on that area. Definitely avoid it with your flip-flop feet if you can, but if you can't avoid it, just go through it, cut it, keep things going. And definitely keep mulching. Again, if you're mulching, let's let those clippings fall back down in there. They're going to create, you know, add a little bit of nutrient back into the soil. They'll help keep a little moisture in. So go ahead and mulch. All good there. No clumping though. If you have clumping, then obviously you don't want that. But the idea being, go ahead and mow. Everything is going to be fine. You're going to be way more perfect, or a lot more close to perfection than anybody else around you. I can promise you that. Next, I have a question from James S. that came in, and this was out of York, PA. He says, my name is James. I live in York, PA. It's considered the south central part of Pennsylvania. I just bought your Cool Season Grass program, and my questions are, now he's got four questions, so we're going to go through these because these all kind of relate to what we've been talking about. He says, I'm going with a pre-emergent strategy this year instead of overseeding. So can I still aerate, and is there a time limit on waiting once the pre-emergent is put down? So let me just talk you through this a little bit. One of the strategies that I have proposed this year for some folks is, I realize that there's a lot of people out there that you're just not able to, or you're not going to go rent an aerator and a mechanical aerator and aerate your lawn. Some of you just aren't physically able to do it. If you don't have a truck, you don't have a way to get it home, and a lot of other reasons. It's a time factor too. So if you're not going to aerate, then I have an alternative for you. It's called our aerate program, our liquid aeration. That works great, dives down, breaks bonds, drives lots, reoxygenates the soil nicely. So that's one option, but that's not what James is asking about here. James is saying, I'm not going to aerate in general, and I'm not going to seed. Probably his lawn is thick enough, which, by the way, if your lawn is already thick, if you already have a healthy lawn, there is no need to add any kind of seed to that. I don't see why you would. If it's already thick, there's just no more room. You know, no more room at the end. Let's not drive any more babies in here. Let's just work with what we got. Let's keep those people healthy and happy. And wow, that analogy kind of went off the rails there for a second, but I think you get what I'm putting down there. So then in that case, what we want to do is, we want to put down a pre-emergent herbicide. If we're not seeding, we want to put down a pre-emergent. What a pre-emergent herbicide does is, it stops weeds from invading, and we have winter or fall germinating annuals like henbit, hairy bittercress, chickweed, and poa annua, or annual bluegrass is a big one. There's a lot of annual bluegrass throughout Pennsylvania, so you want to stop that because you want to just take care of your good grass that's there and keep the invaders out. So you're going to put down a pre-emergent herbicide. We have one available on thelawncarenut.com. It's a dithiapyr is the active ingredient in there. It's a granular. It goes down at 4 pounds per thousand, gives you 3 to 4 months protection, which one application would be fine in York, Pennsylvania there. You put that down, water it in, you're good. It also includes 20% potash, and at that 4 pounds per thousand, you're going to get a full pound of potassium in the lawn, which is great for helping your lawn recover from summer stress. So it's a product I had developed for a couple different reasons, and it looks like James is going that route. And he says, do I still aerate? So the answer is, James, If your lawn is not compacted, then no, there's no need to aerate it mechanically, period. You can use, again, I mentioned our aerate product, our liquid aeration product, which will dive down and create a lot of oxygen in the soil. It'll break bonds. It does the same thing without the mechanical disturbance or having to, you know, go out and rent the machine. You could use that, but if you don't need that, then don't use that either. Just let the lawn go. But getting into the gist of this first part of the question that James is asking is, Alan, I'm using the pre-emergent. Can I or should I still aerate? And if so, when? So definitely you do not want to mechanically aerate after you've applied pre-emergent. The way the pre-emergents that we use work is they create a vapor barrier right at the soil line there. And what that vapor does is as these weed seeds that germinate and start to come up, it disrupts their cell division and kills them. That's kind of how it works. And if you've mechanically aerated punched holes with a machine that comes in, and if you've ever aerated, it's a rather violent process, that will break up that vapor barrier. It will cause it to dissipate in a lot of areas and can allow the weed seeds to break through. The other thing that a mechanical aeration can do is stir up some weed seeds that you don't want being stirred up, especially if they were just dropped, say, by some Poa annua just a couple months earlier. You don't want to stir those up with a mechanical aeration. You want to leave those dogs to lie, let them germinate inside of that nice vapor barrier and die all on their own, a slow, quiet death where you never have to see them. Now, the other side of that could be, well, I'll aerate now, and then I'll throw my pre-emergent down after. And I would say you could do that, but still think about a vapor barrier. It wants to reside right at the soil line. If you have all of these cores laying everywhere, it kind of can make your lawn, you know, just picture it. You know, there's cores laying up everywhere. How's the vapor barrier supposed to work in and around those? And again, what weed seeds might be inside those cores that'll get sifted out? I just don't recommend any type of mechanical disturbance to the lawn, either right before and definitely not right after you put down a pre-emergent. If you're going with a pre-emergent plan, go with the pre-emergent plan and stick that out. Again, you can use the liquid aeration, though. It will go through the barrier just like water or any other liquid, get into the soil and do the same thing for you, and you're all good. Now, the second part of his question is, since I'm using the pre-emergent, I know I'm not supposed to overseed, but can I in the spring? This is an excellent part of your question here, James. And yes, you can overseed in the spring. Now, we're going to talk about maybe why I wouldn't recommend that you do that. But for sure, this product only has a 3 to 4 month residual. If you stick with the 4 pounds per 1,000 square foot rate that I recommend, you're going to get 3 to 4 months of protection out of that. So here we are in September, York, Pennsylvania. Perfect time. As soon as your soil temperatures start to fall to 70, which I believe for you is going to be sometime here real soon, that's when you want to get the pre-emergent down. So if you get 3 to 4 months out, September to October, November, December, I'm pretty sure that by the time you get to December, your ground is going to be frozen and there's no more threat of these weeds germinating and you're going to be fine. Then you can just resume in the spring. Now he continues on with the third part of his question. If I overseed in the spring, is it still a no-no to use pre-emergent? Yes, that is correct. Any pre-emergent we use, dithiapyr is one I'm talking about here, but we also have prodiamine available usually in the spring. We'll probably have both this year because they work interchangeably, is if you use prodiamine or dithiapyr or any other pre-emergent, you cannot overseed. The only product that you can overseed with in limited cases is called Tenacity. That's a brand name, but the actual active ingredient is called mesotrione, and you'll get about 30 days of pre-emergence control out of that. I'm not going to get down that road right now. There are a lot of passionate believers in that one, and I am not against it. It's just not one of those things that I necessarily talk so much about in the fall, but that is the only one that you can use. That is the only one that you can use at the time of overseeding if you follow the instructions. But for the most part, the pre-emergents that we use, which give us long-term control of crabgrass, or in this case, Poa annua, or some of the other, you know, fall germinating annuals I've talked about, you cannot seed. So in the spring, if you're going to seed, then you can't use pre-emergent. And the risk that you run into is you can have any seed that grows in the spring get overwhelmed and destroyed with crabgrass come the summer. And that's why I don't recommend spring seeding. I have seen too many times where you'll put in your seed in the spring, it'll start to grow. But crabgrass being an annual, it lives fast and it dies hard. So it will outgrow, it will outpace whatever Kentucky bluegrass or tall fescue or whatever you put in there. It will outgrow it, outpace it, outcompete it. And a lot of the seeding that you did in the spring will be for naught. So that's why I recommend going with this pre-emergent strategy here in the fall that you have here, James, that you also couple that right up with a lot of heavy fertilization. Cool season lawns can take heavy nitrogen fertilizer in the fall. Carbon X would be excellent. 818X Green would also be excellent. put that in there, hammer those in there, thicken that lawn up in the fall since you're keeping out the weeds, you're not seeding, you're not aerating, still push the existing lawn that you have. And then the next spring, just pick right up with that same strategy. As soon as soil temperatures start to get over 55 in the spring, start pushing again with heavy fert. Fertilize every 4 weeks, hit it hard, 3/4 pound. Maybe you go a pound, keep the pre-emergence in to keep the crabgrass out and just keep ramping that lawn up. Then when you get through summer, and again, sometimes summer causes damage from disease, insects, whatever, but then when you get to the next fall, you'll make the decision again. Am I going to go with pre-emergence strategy, or do I need to seed now to thicken things back up? That's kind of how the cycle works. The idea being that after a while, after a couple years, you shouldn't have to really overseed anymore because your lawn should be sufficiently thick. And then his fourth question is, if I do overseed, what ground temp should I be looking for? So I kind of just covered a little bit about that. Now, James isn't seeding in the fall time, but I'll go over the seed windows anyway. If you're seeding in the fall time, you want to get your grass seed down as soil temperatures are falling to 70 degrees out of summer. And you want to make sure that you've got a 45-day window there before you get any kind of a frost or freeze in the outside air temperature. So as soil temperatures fall to 70, seed goes down, you need a 45-day window, which is two mowings as well. And I say two mowings as the grass has become mature. That will then ensure that your grass can make it through winter. If you're gonna seed in the spring, and listen, I recommend against seeding in the spring, but as I mentioned in the very beginning of the podcast, everybody can do their own thing. You got tons of different strategies that you can go after. Just because I give you some certain advice, it doesn't mean you have to follow it. You can always go against the rules and still have great success and learn along the way. If you're gonna seed in the spring, then you want to seed as soil temperatures are approaching, you know, probably 55 or 60 in the spring, but you don't want there to be a chance for a freeze to come. And that's one of those things in York, Pennsylvania. Sometimes you guys can get a freeze as late as April. So you kind of have to deal with that. But definitely as soil temperatures are rising out of winter up to 55, 60, that's when you would seed, and then you're off to the races from there. Now, I've got one here, and this is for my warm season friends. We're going all the way out to the central coast of California. By the way, Next products now available in California, root growth stimulant, RGS, Humic 12, Aerate, Dethatch, all the fertilizers, 1801 Green Punch, 901 Green Start. We do have the starter fertilizer, Green Pop I mentioned. All of those are now available to you folks out in California, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. Click the link in the description below if you're on YouTube, or visit thelawncarenut.com to check those out and get them delivered today. Plenty of time left. So we do have one recording here. If you want to possibly be on the podcast with your call in, please call 833-526-8477. That's 833-526-8477. Leave a recording, and if I can, I'll get that on the podcast. So with that, let's go on out to Central California.
Hey, Alan, my name is Jerry Lopez. I live in the Central California, Visalia, to be more specific. I have 3,600 square foot of Bermuda, common Bermuda, and I have about 1,000 square feet of Tifway Bermuda in my front yard. My question stems from my backyard. I got it looking pretty decent, but I've noticed that I have about three spots that have brown patches in them. I did put two 10-pound bags of Scott's Disease X down. I put one bag down, and the other bag down 2 weeks after that, and it seems to have helped, but it didn't go away. So I want my yard to look very nice, and that's why I'm calling. So maybe you can help me identify what the issue is and what to do to solve it. Thank you so much for your YouTube channels, and I appreciate your knowledge. Thank you, brother. Bye.
Jerry, thanks for your question. This is a good one, and I love talking about Bermuda grass because the one thing that you have with Bermuda grass is you have the ultimate alpha male grass type. And when I say that, what I mean is it will outspread, it will outcompete just about anything around it, and it's great for that. You can actually get rid of most of the weeds in a Bermuda lawn by mowing it low and mowing it often, but that's not the problem that you have. The challenge that you have is what you're thinking is a disease, and I would tend to agree with you that it probably was a disease because you said that you put down a couple applications of Scott's Disease X and it seems to have helped. Now, I don't typically see a lot of disease in Bermuda. It's probably not one of the more that's prone to it, but it definitely can get some. And if you say that you saw some improvement, then what I would say is you're probably all good at this point, and what you're just seeing is residual damage or scarring. You have to realize that when the Bermuda dies, and I don't know how big these patches are, but it's not like it all breaks down overnight and goes away and disappears. Just like scars on your body, they take a long time to fade. Now, the lawn is a lot quicker than that because it's actively growing, and because you have Bermuda, it spreads with rhizomes and stolons, and it spreads and takes ground. So it just may take a little bit of time for those scars to dissipate. Now, sunlight will help that, and mowing will help that, and that's what I would recommend that you do. First off, is start mowing the lawn a lot more often. If you've been mowing, say, every 5 or 6 days, I recommend you mow every 3 days for a few weeks here. Maybe mow every day. Maybe mow every 2 days. It'll be great exercise for you. I like the excuse to getting out and mow because I need the exercise. But for whatever you can do, mow more. The more you mow, the healthier it will grow. The more rhizomes, the more stolons it will stimulate. It will stimulate that Bermuda to spread out instead of growing high. That's going to help those scars to go away. Now, another thing you can do is you can spray those scars with our dethatch product. It's still plenty warm out where you're at, and that will help to eat up those dead spots a lot quicker, as well as you could reoxygenate the soil with some aerate, and what that's going to do is just help as those rhizomes and stolons move in. It's going to help them tack down, it's going to help them root, and it's going to help them continue taking ground a little faster. And then the third thing you can do, again, you're mowing every 2 or 3 days here, is you can put down RGS, root growth stimulant. That's got the sea kelp in it. It's got fulvic acid. It's got humic acid. And that will also help to stimulate a lot of growth and help to push out that dead stuff and push in the live stuff a lot quicker. So my first reaction always with Bermuda is no matter what the problem is to mow it more often and let it do what it does naturally, and that is take more ground. Of course, you should also be still fertilizing. You have plenty of growth season left out there. Nice spoon feeding in of low N. Get some potash in there every 4 weeks or so, just a nice quarter to a half a pound of N. Keep that Bermuda moving. Keep that Bermuda spreading, and it will give you all the reward that you want. It'll fill those brown spots in really, really fast. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and end it here. I really appreciate you guys listening. I just want to say thoughts and prayers out to all my friends along the Florida East Coast and up into the Carolinas, Georgia, all through there, the low country. Praying for you guys, hoping that everything comes out okay as we watch this Hurricane Dorian make its way through. With that, I'm Alan Hain, the Lawn Care Nut. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the lawn.